picking up from where we left off in our last lesson. The Lord is reprimanding the nation of Israel, and specifically several tribes who have failed to rid their tribal areas of the Canaanites and destroy them and their high places, their places of worship, their idols, and all that type of stuff. They're supposed to do that. They're supposed to destroy it. And the Lord has already spoken through to the tribe of Judah and the tribe of Simeon. And now we're moving on to the tribe of Manasseh. And what is happening here is where we left off. Manasseh has been told by Joshua through the Lord to go back to its tribal land and to destroy all the Canaanites. And so they're going to go back to a place called Luz. And they're going to attack Luz and they're going to destroy that town. The Lord's going to be with them. They're going to destroy the town and they're going to rename the area Bethel. So what's interesting is when they're spying out the town of Luz, a Canaanite's going to come out of it and they're going to ask him, hey, where's the entrance to the gate of the city? And he tells them, and they promise to deal kindly with him. But he's a Canaanite. He's supposed to have died. But he didn't die. Neither did his family. He just moved on up the road and started a new city, founded a new city, and he called it Luz. We called it the new Luz. Verse 22. Likewise, the house of Joseph went up against Bethel, and the Lord was with them. The house of Joseph spied out Bethel. The spies saw a man coming out of the city, and they said to him, please show us the entrance to the city, and we will treat you kindly. So he showed them the entrance to the city, and they struck the city with the edge of the sword, but they let the man and all his family go free. The man went into the land of the Hittites and built a city and named it Luz, which is its name to this day. Once again, the writer is telling us old news. This is over in the book of Joshua. This is over that meeting where Joshua had that meeting with the folks at Shiloh where the land was divided up. And Manasseh had complained about the small portion of land that had been allotted to them. Now that's in Joshua chapter 17, verses 14 through 18. It was not a small portion of land, but they thought it was. They thought they were a great nation, a tribal nation, I should say. So Joshua did not relent when they complained. He absolutely did not. Neither did Joshua give them any more land. Instead, Joshua instructed Manasseh to go back into their land that they had been allotted and destroy the Canaanites as ordered by the Lord, and they would have plenty of land. So in this passage, we learn that Manasseh returned back to the land and they attacked Luz. Now, where's Luz? Luz's name was Bethel. The Israelites called it Bethel. The Canaanites called it Luz. Bethel or Luz slash Bethel, was just over the ravine from Ai, the second town that was taken on the conquest of the Promised Land. And the king of Bethel, the king of Luz, the Canaanite king of Luz or Bethel, was already dead because he and his warriors had gone over to Ai and got in the city and helped them fight against the Israelites there by this time, 5.5-6 years earlier. And so the king of Luz was dead. Now in this passage, this resident of Luz slash Bethel aided Manasseh in its battle against the city. However, in response, the resident simply moved to the Hittite country and established a new city with the same name. The Hittites controlled two portions of land. The Hittite Canaanite tribes of the Hittites controlled two portions of the land. One section was a little bit lower down below the city of Luz, and the other was way up north of the Sea of Galilee, which was called the Sea of Chinnereth back then. So we do not know which section this man moved to, the one down below or the one way up above. We do not know. But the point is, this man established a new town and he called it Luz. And at the time of the writing of the book of Judges, this town still existed and was Canaanite filled. I want you also know that we do not know where this new town of Luz was. It has been lost in the history of that country, of Israel or the Canaanites or whatever. It's been lost. We do not know where it is. That was Manasseh's first failure by not killing that man. His second failure was Manasseh failed to take out the Canaanites who were in the northwestern part of their land, headed over towards the Mediterranean Sea. We see that in verse number 27. But Manasseh did not take possession of Beth Shean and its villages, or Taanach and its villages, or the inhabitants of Dor or its villages, or the inhabitants of Ibleam or its villages, or the inhabitants of Megiddo and its villages. So the Canaanites persisted in living in that land, and it came about when Israel became strong that they put the Canaanites to forced labor, but they did not drive out them completely. We might not recognize these cities, all of them, but we should recognize one, and that is Megiddo. We should recognize it because we sometimes use that name. Is associated with the valley that where it sits up on a perch and it looks over. And that valley is called the Valley of Megiddo. It's also called, with a little different name, the Valley of Harmageddon or Megiddo-Mageddon. Manasseh failed to take these five cities and get this and their little villages around them. In other words, each of these five cities had villages pockets that were not walled cities that were around these five cities. And the text says later, Manasseh put these people to forced labor. Well, what does that mean, forced labor? Does it mean slaves? No, it does not mean slaves. Wycliffe's first English translation renders this verse like this. First English translation ever made. And it's a little hard, archaic for us to understand because it uses the word soothly. Soothly, after that, Israel was strengthened. He made them tributaries, either to pay tribute or would not do away them. In other words, what he is saying here, Wycliffe really helps us understand that these Canaanite cities became tributaries. In other words, they had to pay taxes to the tribe of Manasseh. However, these taxes were not to be paid in money, they were to be paid in labor, but not constant labor. They only had to work enough in labor to pay their taxes. The Hebrews used this word lamas, L-A-M-A-S, and it means under tribute. It can also mean forced tribute. The word labor is not used in the verse in the original like we have in our text. Nevertheless, the Hebrew word lamas denotes a body of men engaged in this labor to pay off their taxes with a building project of some sort rather than with money, a silver and gold. Now, by the time of Solomon, these towns were forced to pay their tributaries also to Solomon in forced labor. That means they had to pay their taxes by working on Solomon's projects. And Solomon had lots of building projects. We see that in 1 Kings 4, 1 Kings 9. But the reference to the Kings passage in Solomon is another 400 years plus down the road. It's way past the time when the writer Samuel, the book of Judges, would have known and put it in this book. So in other words, during the time of this writer's life, Samuel's life, he saw Manasseh, the house of Joseph, Manasseh grow strong enough that they were able to force these Canaanite cities and their little villages around them to pay taxes to them by helping with building projects, not with money. Well, from Manasseh, then the next topic comes to the tribe of Ephraim. Ephraim decided just to live with the Canaanites in their land also, verse 29. Ephraim did not drive out the Canaanites who were living in Gezer, so the Canaanites lived in Gezer among them. Now, if you remember, the nation of Israel did not go and attack Gezer to kill the people or the king. Instead, the king of Gezer and his warriors went down to Lachish and helped fight against Israel there. So the scripture never tells us they made it to Gezer. So Ephraim just simply failed to remove the Canaanites of Gezer and decided just to live with them in their territory, and this disobeyed the Lord. It was a failure. From Ephraim, we move to the tribal area of Zebulun. Verse number 30, Zebulun did not drive out the inhabitants of Kitron or the inhabitants of Nahalol. So the Canaanites lived among them and became subject to forced labor. So just as with Manasseh's Canaanites, Zebulun followed the suit of Manasseh and said, okay, y'all can continue to live. However, we want you to pay taxes. In order to pay taxes, we want you to help with our building projects in order to pay your taxes. And we don't want your silver. We don't want your gold. We want your labor. Well, from Zebulun, we moved just a little ways over into the tribal area of Asher. Asher did not drive out the inhabitants of Akko or the inhabitants of Sidon or of Halab or of Achzib or of Helba or of Apkik or Rehob. So the Asherites lived among the Canaanites, the inhabitants of the land, for they did not drive them out. Six towns in the land of Asher were left in the hands of the Canaanites. And Asher did not tax them, it says, or it doesn't say that he taxed them, so we must assume they didn't. Asher wasn't strong enough to make them be forced labor. Then comes down to the next door to Asher, the tribe of Asher is the tribe of Naphtali in verse number 33. Naphtali did not drive out the inhabitants of Beth Shemesh or the inhabitants of Beth Anath, but lived among the Canaanites, the inhabitants of the land. And the inhabitants of Beth Shemesh and Beth Anath became forced labor for them. Two towns here in the Canaanites area were left alive. Well, they're in Naphtali. And they were taxed with payments by helping with the building projects and the forced labor, just as was done with Manasseh and Zebulun. And lastly, we come to the tribe of Dan in verse number 34. And this is interesting. Then the Amorites forced the sons of Dan into the hill country, for they did not allow them to come down to the valley. Yet the Amorites persisted in living in Mount Heres, in Ajalon, in Shalabim. But when the power of the house of Joseph grew strong, they became forced labor. The border of the Amorites ran from the ascent of Akrabim, from Selah, and upward. Okay, here's a little background. The Canaanites are called here Amorites, and they are still descendants of Canaan, and therefore they're a Canaanite tribe. Dan failed. Dan could not push them back. Instead, the Amorites pushed Dan back into the hill country and out of the valley. However, in time, the house of Joseph, that's the tribe of Manasseh and the tribe of Ephraim, became strong enough that they were able to tax the Amorites and have them pay with forced labor. Dan was not able to do that and subdue them. Dan came little in the eyes of the nation, in fact, and this is a disappointment to the Lord. The writer identifies this length of this Amorite land with the word Akrabim, and that means that is a mountain. And that mountain named Akrabim, it means scorpion. Now, scorpions are prevalent everywhere in this whole area. And in Numbers chapter 34 and verse 4, we find that this mountain is called Mahale Akrabim. So here's the deal. Coming up from the wilderness of Zin from the southeast below the Dead Sea at the border of the Edomites and moving over this mountain Akrabim range, there is a pass in between the mountains that is called Scorpion Pass. And it leads up onto this level plain field valley that belongs to the Philistine. Now we also hear there's a word called Selah, and that means the rock. And there's a city near this Scorpion Pass that is called Selah, the rock. And that is the location of this pass. Now the place of the town called Selah is not known today, but we know where the pass is. Okay, so be that as it may, the land of the Amorites ran north Western up through and to Dan's territory, and all of that area up through to Dan's territory was controlled by the Amorites. Dan had failed. Well, moving on in and without really stopping for a chapter break, we must say we're in chapter 2 now. The opening here of chapter 2, this writer adds this story that's told in Joshua 23. He's coming back and making a circle again. There in Joshua had met with these people for the last time at Shiloh. He's going to meet again with them at the end of his life in Shechem, but he's the last time in Shiloh. And he warned these people, just as he's been warning them, to fulfill the Lord's command. He's going to send them out to do it, and they're not going to do it. So the Lord would fight against them. He says, the Lord's going to fight against you. This is about the third time through this, by the way, because we really kind of just went through it in the first part of Judges. Here in Judges, we learn of the moment that the Lord reprove this nation because they had disobeyed by not killing all the Canaanite tribes. And in this pass around, we find out that it was a reprimand. It was not told to us in Joshua 23, but it's told to us here in Judges 2 of what happened back then at Shiloh when the Lord reprimands them. Here it is in chapter 2, verse 1. Now the angel of the Lord came up from Gilgal to Bochim. And he said, I brought you up out of Egypt and led you into the land which I have sworn to your fathers. And I said, I will never break my covenant with you. Okay, so the angel of the Lord has appeared. The angel of the Lord is the Lord. The Lord is resting on top of the mercy seat, on top of the Ark of the Covenant, behind the veil, inside the Holy of Holies, inside the tabernacle. However, at times the Lord would appear to people, and specifically members of the nation of Israel, in the form of what is called the angel of the Lord. He is still God. He did not leave his place back behind the veil in the tabernacle. He is still there glowing, but he has the ability as God to appear as the angel of the Lord. For example, he is still glowing in the tabernacle, behind the veil in the tabernacle, whenever Balak has hired Balaam to go and curse Israel, who's on the plains of Moab. Moses is still alive. And what happens is the angel of the Lord appears to Balaam with his sword drawn, and his donkey has to stop him because the angel of the Lord is going to use that sword. To kill Balaam. But the radiance of the Lord is still glowing in the Holy of Holies. You see, God is God. He is everywhere, and He can be in two or more places at the same time. He is not limited by our finite minds and finite laws of nature. The Lord did not remain in Gilgal when the tabernacle was moved to Shiloh. When the tabernacle was moved from Gilgal to Shiloh, the Lord went with it. He moved to Gilgal to Shiloh with the tabernacle. The camp of Israel was setting just outside the tabernacle area there at Shiloh. And after this reprimand, the nation of Israel called that camp at Shiloh Bochim. Bochim means weepers. It is where the nation of Israel wept because the Lord reprimanded the nation for not destroying all the Canaanites in the land. So here the angel of the Lord has appeared to the camp to make his first point by telling the people of the promise that he made to bring them out of Egypt. And he did so. Now we come to the second point, and that's what the Lord had prescribed. The second point is found in the second part of the second verse here when the Lord says this, "And as for you, you shall make no covenant with the inhabitants of this land. You shall tear down their altars." The prescription was given by the Lord, the same prescription back in Deuteronomy chapter 7 and in Deuteronomy chapter 20. All Canaanites were to be destroyed, and their holy places and their objects of worship were to be torn down. So from that, from what he prescribed, we come to what he perceived. In verse 2b, it says this, "But you have not obeyed me. What is this you have done?" The Lord knew exactly what the nation had done. It was not hidden from him, because he can see everything. He knew they had not fulfilled his order. The nation was going on with life in the promised land as if the task that they had been assigned was completely done, but it was not. The Canaanites still lived in that land. From that, we hear next what the Lord has pronounced. He's pronounced it in verse number 3 against them. "Therefore, I also said, I will not drive them out before you, but they will become as thorns in your sides, and their gods will be a snare to you." The Lord's not going to fight for Israel unless Israel is ready to fight the Canaanites. Well, as we have seen in the stories of Exodus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, and now in Judges, when the Israelites keep the law of the Lord and His orders, He fights for them. And when they do not, He doesn't do anything. So now we come to this response of the people, because we're still dealing with the word Bochim, if we really want to know, with the crying and the weeping. It's the reprimand, and we see it in verse 4. "When the angel of the Lord spoke these words to all the sons of Israel, the people lifted up their voices and wept, so they named that place Bochim." Now let me just give you the short on this. Shiloh is where they're meeting. But it is very common for the nation of Israel to give nicknames to places, and several nicknames to the place. In fact, when they came out of Egypt, they landed at a place called Horeb, which was named, was the Midianite name of that place, was Horeb. But whenever Moses struck the rock and water came forth, they named it Rephidim. Well, after that, when they battled the Amalekites, they came back and they named it two more names. They gave it two more nicknames, Massa, which means where they were tested, and Meribah, which means where there was strife. And so they're at Shiloh. Shiloh's the name of this place, and it has been given a nickname by the Israelites, and the nickname is Bochim. Well, the nation of Israel repented there and wept there, because Bochim means weeping, and they did so with offerings, verse 5b. And there they sacrificed to the Lord. Now, the writer doesn't tell us what kind of sacrifice they did. Surely it was a sin sacrifice, a sin offering. But now the writer tells us that there was a delay in the sin of the downfall, in this topic, the sin of the downfall. There's a delay in it. There's a delay until the death of Joshua in verse number 6. When Joshua had dismissed the people, the sons of Israel went each to his inheritance to possess the land. The people served the Lord all the days of Joshua. In other words, they've not completed their conquest to destroy all the Canaanites, but they're not doing anything really wrong except for that. They're serving the Lord, and at some point in time, they're going to probably try to destroy the Canaanites, which they never do. Then in verse 7b, the writer tells us that they were faithful until the death of Joshua's elders and all the days of the elders who survived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord which he had done for Israel. Here's the catch that's in this. Some of the elders had died, and there were new elders that were there who had never seen the works of the Lord and did not know what the Lord had done, and they're going to help lead the nation off into a new direction. So now we come to the start of the sin of the downfall in verse number 8. The start with the death of Joshua, with the death of the elders, we see the start in verse 8. Then Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110, and they buried him in the territory of his inheritance in Timnath-Heres, in the hill country of Ephraim, north of Mount Gash. So the writer again tells us, we saw this, this is old news, we saw this at the end of the book of Joshua. Joshua has died. So has he died three times? No, he hasn't died three times. We saw it in the first verse of Judges. We see it here in this verse of Judges. We saw it in the last verse. Does he die of Joshua? Has he died three times? No. It's just that this writer in the book of Judges is passing through this story and giving us a little more. And here's what he says. Upon the death of Joshua, something happens. And what happens is this. There's the death, and there comes up this new generation. And it happens like this. All that generation also were gathered to their fathers. In other words, it wasn't long after the death of Joshua that they had all died who had seen the works of the miracles. All the elders who had seen it were dead. And that brings us to the next point. There's the rise of a new generation who did not know the Lord, verse number 10b. And there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord. One would think that the nation's history with its close relationship to the Lord would have been passed down from generation to generation. They were told to teach it to the children and to the children's children, but not so. A new generation of Israel and their elders have now come into power who do not know the Lord. Not only did they not know the Lord, they did not know the works of the Lord, as we find here in 10c, nor yet the work which he had done for Israel. This new generation arose who had not seen the work of the Lord. Therefore, they did not believe in the past work of the Lord. Oh, how quickly each new generation dismisses the history of the past generation. Or they want to dismiss it because they think they have a better way. Oh, how quickly each new young generation wants to wipe from the pages of the events of the past generation out of history. Oh, how quickly each new generation will make the same mistakes of the past generation if they do not learn from the mistakes of the past generation. And if they do not learn, their new path into the future will cause them to make those same mistakes again. Those same mistakes again. And so with that, the sin of the downfall of the nation of Israel has been reviewed by this writer, probably Samuel. The problem was they did not remove the Canaanites and their worship objects from the land. And those Canaanites are going to be a thorn in the flesh of the nation of Israel for as long as Israel survives. Israel is still alive today. And folks, the thorn in the flesh of Israel is still the Canaanites. Still there. Still there. And they are not going to be rid of until the Lord gets rid of them after He destroys the whole world and brings it into a new world called the New Jerusalem. And as one passage says, finally, that the gates of the New Jerusalem are open and the people can come and go. Why? And the passage says this, because there are no Canaanites in the land. That ends our first section in the book of Judges, the sin of the downfall. And from that, we move into the sequence of the downfall the next time we are together.